Now, clearly, some tasks will be eliminated. Some jobs will be eliminated. Many others will be created. It's going to be the kind of turmoil we went through with the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, probably. Could be as big as that. And certainly combined with robotics and drones and all the products that are using AI, it's a big change for human capital. So I think HR managers need to be thinking about this. You need to think about how are people going to be trained to do it. But look, people said, computers would eliminate a lot of jobs, and we are still consistently creating more jobs around the world every year. We don't create steno pools anymore. Or, there are a lot of jobs that went away. Telegraph operator, not a good one. But now it's prompt engineer.
Welcome to the Beyond Speaking podcast from Premier Speakers Bureau, featuring in-depth conversations with the world's most in-demand keynote speakers.
Hi, I'm Brian Lord, president here at Premier Speakers Bureau, and I'm excited to welcome as our guest today, Terry Jones. He is a digital disruptor, an author, and a venture capitalist, as well as an expert on doing business in a world disrupted by AI. He's founded five startups with $2 billion IPOs, Kayak and Travelocity. He's served on 17 corporate boards. His success has established him as a thought leader on innovation and disruption. As a speaker, author, venture capitalist, and board member, Terry's been helping companies use the tools and techniques he's discovered to succeed in our fast-changing world. And if you've ever wondered if Terry is actually ahead of a curve, he actually had a beard before COVID. So one of like the five people. So he's right. He was there before any of us were.
Been for a long time.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Terry, thank you so much for joining us here on the Beyond Speaking podcast.
Brian, it's great to be with you and have an opportunity to talk about what's going on in the world today.
Yeah. Well, you've been with us before on one of our other programs. And this one I really want to focus on. We can get to a lot of, you've done so many cool things over the years. But I know the big questions on everyone's mind right now, especially for those leaders out there, is what are the best ways to adapt and take advantage of AI instead of getting run over by it?
Well, I've been working in AI for a long time. I had my own AI company almost 10 years ago. Ginni Rometty, the head of IBM, invited me to come teach IBM Watson about travel. And that led to a company that built a bunch of AI products. I learned a lot about it. Unfortunately, we were too early. Nobody was quite ready to adopt, although the product worked. That's all changed now. It's here. It's being built into products we use every day, or it's being built into Word and to Google and to Salesforce. But the real question is for companies, what should they be doing? I think the first thing is they have to begin to really dive in and learn about it deeply, because it's here whether you like it or not. And the most important thing to understand about AI is that these are learning models. They continuously learn. Tesla has 10 billion miles of driving learning. So if you're not learning and don't have a learning machine of your own, you're way behind the competition, because they're learning 24/7/365 and you're not. So can you ever catch them? It won't be easy. The key thing is to identify something in your company that's small and say, let's go attack that. Now, it might be something using these large language models and OpenAI, and that could work immediately in text solutions. So it's marketing, or it's documents, or it's even illegal, or it might be, I'm going to build AI into one of my products. But I think you need to start learning right now, because everybody else is already learning.
Yeah. Where as an executive do you go, other than putting it into practice in your own company, like maybe a small area, where does somebody go just to learn the basics, the inside out of it? Obviously hire Terry Jones, but aside from that,
I need to speak.
Aside from that, where somebody wakes up tomorrow, where are they going to start learning about that and kind of getting their feet wet?
Well, I encourage them just first to jump into OpenAI itself, jump into GPT and try it out. I talked to another speaker who asked a bunch of CEOs how many of them actually had used it, and he was shocked at how few had tried it. And you got to know all your employees already have. So it's pretty important for you just to get in and feel what it can do. And then, you know, there's so many articles out there. I mean, I clip articles every day because obviously I'm speaking on it, that talk about how to apply it. And, you know, whether it's McKinsey or Gartner or Forbes or Business Week, you name it, you can learn an awful lot from people who are spending hours and hours and hours, you know, researching this stuff. And then, you know, try it. Go try Midjourney and do a picture, you know, and go try Bard. Try these things so you understand, and then think about how you can apply it to your company. You know, somebody at IBM said something to me about 7 years ago that still resonates. He said, the most powerful AIs will be those who put together a recipe that contains public data, which is OpenAI, right, or something like it. Public data, industry data. So that could be from your trade association. And then corporate data, your data. And you put that together in a unique recipe because your data is unique. So if you add that to the other data, you're going to come up with something new. I'll give you an example. IBM, when I was there, invented a product called Chef Watson. They took all the ingredients in the world. They put it in Chef Watson. They took every recipe from Bon Appetit. They put them together and they said, make new things that nobody's ever made before. And some of them were horrible and some of them were amazing. And they got chefs to cook them. I actually tasted some of them. And that's what you can do, is to come up with a new recipe or a new formula. I mean, look, drug development is moving so much faster. But it could be another way of looking at your company, your product, even your business model.
How do you think in general, now kind of breaking down from the big company model to employees, how do you think the AI will affect the future of work?
Well, it's going to affect in a lot of different ways. I mean, obviously, we're talking about very powerful assistants to let us be more productive. But we're an economy right now where you can't hire anybody. I mean, we need more people. So we need people to be more productive. And it's going to do that. Now, clearly, some tasks will be eliminated. Some jobs will be eliminated. Many others will be created. It's going to be the kind of turmoil we went through at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, probably. This is could be as big as that. And certainly combined with robotics and drones and all the products that are using AI, it's a big change for human capital. So I think HR managers need to be thinking about this. You need to think about how are people going to be trained to do it. But look, people said, you know, computers would eliminate a lot of jobs. And we are still consistently creating more jobs around the world every year. We don't create steno pools anymore. Or, you know, there are a lot of jobs that went away. Telegraph operator, not a good one. Yeah. But, you know, now it's prompt engineer.
I'm always curious, like breaking it down to a specific industry. So let's take finance industry. Yeah, I know you do a lot of speaking for finance. How is AI going to affect the finance industry?
Well, I think we're going to see, first of all, easier ways for consumers to interact with their financial institution, because now I can use natural language search to find what I want. We're going to see, and we've already seen for a long time, predictive models based, you know, in financial planning. We're going to see more of that. I mean, that's what the big hedge funds have used for a long time. But we are seeing companies, Morgan Stanley announced, you know, an AI financial planner. Are they better than the person you have today? Unclear yet. But I think people are going to see many more predictive models than we've ever seen in the past that can be helpful in whether it's financial planning or, you know, betting on sports. we're gonna see lots more models. So I think every industry is going to be changed. I think if I look at the travel industry, I'm working with three GPT startups right now who are changing the way you'll plan your trip. Whether it's to say, I want to go from here to there, and it's going to plan the route and let you adjust it. It's going to be much more than Kayak and Expedia saying, yes, here are the flights from here to there. It's going to do what a really sophisticated travel agent does. And that's already happening, and let you buy it easily. I think you're seeing many retail companies beginning to use natural language search, along with analysis of images and analysis of reviews. So if you say, in my instance, I want a great hotel in the Caribbean that has golf and spa, you're not going to have to look through 1,000. It's going to show you one with a picture of golf and a review of the spa. Because today, you're going to look through 200 pictures to figure out if that spa is a hot tub or a building, right? It's just hard. And that's going to be so much easier. I think commerce will change very quickly.
What are you most excited about when it comes to AI?
Well, I think that it's the new frontier and it's learning all the time. I mean, OpenAI announced today full voice input. So we're going to see that change. I think we're going to see totally new business models coming out of this. So I think the fact that it learns is important. Now, I think, you know, we don't have the three laws of robotics from Isaac Asimov that I think we ought to have. And I think it's heartening to see the government becoming involved and the AI companies asking for regulation, because I think there needs to be some. And we need to understand this. I think the implication of video fakes and some of this stuff are scary. I'm on the board of two internet security companies, and we're working hard because guess what? The bad guys are already using AI. So that's the bad side. The good side is that I think we will find these tools incredibly helpful in our everyday lives and our business lives, making us more productive.
Yeah, and that was you beat me to my next question is what are you most afraid of or concerned about? And so obviously you have the deep fakes. Is there anything else that we should be concerned about or afraid
of? Well, I think, yeah, I think in your own company, some companies have banned OpenAI. I met with a guy who was with one of his employees in South America who was not proficient in English. And he said, gee, I'm running every one of my emails through OpenAI to translate it before I send it. And the CEO just went, oh my God, all my secrets are now in OpenAI, right? And there's other implications. Other people have lost things through doing that. So you have to be very careful what you let loose in these learning animals. I think, and anyway, it's much more powerful if you build that recipe of your own. So I think security and having strong policies about who can use it, where you can use it, what you can do, just like you have an internet security policy, needs to be implemented right away. And you'll learn more as you'll experiment, and we'll all get burned a little bit, but hopefully not big time. I think those implications are serious. I think the implications of the video products and what we're going to be seeing on social media is much more scary. But that's kind of beyond what we can do corporately.
Sure. Yeah. And that is one of those things, like having that, like trust is such a big word. Like, how do you have trust in a world like this that we're having coming up?
Well, that's right. And I think that's where trusted brands are extremely important, and relationships with companies are important, so that you understand who you're buying from and who you're dealing with. I mean, we've kind of learned about where the bad part of town is on the internet. You know, we figure that out. It's going to be harder to figure out because there'll be more fakes and more fake reviews, and AI will generate a lot of really smart garbage and more emails that, you know, it's not going to be like the Nigerian email that said, please send your money to win $1 million. These things are sophisticated. So that's kind of the scary part. But I am heartened. I talked to both my senators here in Nevada, and they're both participating in the AI meetings. And everybody's concerned. So that's good.
Yeah, that is good. And looking at sort of the broader picture here, so obviously AI, ChatGPT, everything else are really big topics. What are the topics that people should be looking at right now in addition to that?
Well, I think that the digital disruption hasn't slowed down. And I've written books about that topic. I mean, speaking about it, I mean, companies are racing to change their models to be more digital. They have to. You know, manufacturing. I just got off the phone with a speech I'm going to do in a few weeks. It's to a manufacturing association. What are they talking about? Robotics, digital twins, you know, AI built into their products, cloud connected products. That's all happening very quickly. So I think understanding how you deal with that, and in my speech there, it really talks about 8 or 10 technologies, and I go through what's happening, how they're impacting businesses. That's basically to scare the hell out of the audience. And the reason I want to do that is because the next part is, what do you do about it? So if they're a little bit nervous after the first half of the speech, they're a little more open to saying, well, where's the life raft?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's really, look, I say disruption and innovation are two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. The reason you call it a disruption is because you didn't do it. If you did it, it would be an innovation, but you didn't, but you could have, right? And so it's really the second half of the speech. When I talk to people about it, is how do you become more innovative in a large corporation? Mm-hmm. Hey, I built Travelocity inside American Airlines. We spun it out. A lot of companies want to understand how to do that kind of innovation inside a large company. And I can help them with that because, you know, they need to be more innovative themselves. And, you know, the other thing I guess I'd say is I talk to large companies and they're so envious of startups. They say, you know, how can they do that? Instead of saying, how could we do that? Mm-hmm. You have things a startup would kill for. You have assets, you have brand, you have supply chain, you have the factory, you have people. And the startup doesn't have any of those. Mm-hmm. They just move fast and break things and you don't. So what's the balance?
Yeah. So what is, like, if obviously don't want to give away the farm here, but what are some of those things that you can do? Like, hey, we want to be more innovative inside what's our company's, version of Travelocity? Like, how does somebody go ahead and start that up? Other than, I know your story, you were, you know, somebody who took a huge risk and had a huge payoff, but what are some of the things if they don't have that person, they're setting up themselves, how do they do that?
Well, I think the number one thing is culture. I talk about killing projects, not people. Corporations never fail. Well, if you never fail, you know, you're not experimenting. I mean, Jeff Bezos said, it's not an experiment if you know the outcome. You don't know the outcome of an experiment. You've got to experiment. And then people have to feel safe that if the project doesn't work, they don't get dinged on their annual review. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, if Terry fails it 4 in a row, okay, maybe he's got to go to the farm club. But, you know, it's really about convincing people. And that's tone at the top, saying, we want you to experiment. We want you to try. And of course, you can fail small today because you can test on the web. You can use a 3D printer. You can build a digital twin. You can even use Kickstarter. Some big companies are experimenting with Kickstarter themselves. And you know, if it doesn't work, okay, it doesn't work. But you didn't waste $10 million. You wasted a few hundred thousand dollars, but you learned something. That's the key. What did you learn from that failure? So it's building that culture where you allow people to experiment, you bring in outside influence, you try things, and then you nurture it. I say, look, put those ideas in a greenhouse. It's like a rose in the winter. You got to protect that idea from the corporation who will probably kill it without noticing. It's an elephant walking by stepping on the rose, right? Yeah. So they got to be careful about that. And then, you know, build the right team. Bring people in from the outside. Bring in people who will argue with you, who will, you know, conflict with you, because that's when the spark of innovation happens. So it's culture and team and budget, and there's a bunch of other things. I wrote a book about it, which you can buy.
$29.95.
Available anywhere books are sold.
What are some, I'm always curious to know, like, putting into practice here, what are some of the mistakes, failures, big lessons you learned with Travelocity and Kayak?
Well, you know, we did some things too early. I put airfares on a map before anybody else. New York Times loved it. Nobody else used it. I was the first guy to build a fare calendar, show you every day of the month and what the airfare is between two cities. Cost me $1 million. I was too early. Now everybody has it. So sometimes you're too early. So I ended up building lots of prototypes and testing them. One of them we built was paging you when your flight was late. And I do mean paging. That's how old this is. But that was an amazing hit. Nobody had ever done that. We instantly, you know, then we put it in cell phones, and now it's normal for the airline to page you and say, or text you, your flight is late. But I built lots of small things. And then if they hit, then we'd sort of case harden them and say, okay, that's a real product. So we at Kayak, our first phone product, which was early in the smartphone days, We said, well, that's got to be about the next flight out and about a hotel for tonight because you got delayed. It's immediacy. We were dead wrong. People were booking just like the desktop, 2 weeks out. And of course, now 60% of bookings come from mobile phones. So if we hadn't listened, if we hadn't had short feedback loops and hadn't rewritten that code almost immediately, we wouldn't have 65 million customers today, which we have. So you got to be listening. And that's listening in a new way, listening on social media, you know, reading all those emails, picking up all those clues, doing the heat maps. What are people doing? Mm-hmm. And what's so cool today is that that works for physical products too. So John Deere doesn't have to wait for the annual meeting to ask the dealer, what do farmers want now? Mm-hmm. They're connected to that tractor every minute. They know what they're doing. Now they just have to listen to it and change the product on the fly like my Tesla does. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why Tesla satisfaction, I think, is so high, because we get new cars all the time. That's really cool.
Yeah, that is pretty amazing. Like I was reading back to your John Deere example. I was reading some analysts who was saying they almost consider it a tech company rather than like farm implements, which.
Oh, just absolutely.
Yeah.
They have totally changed. Their tractor takes into effect, you know, weather, and they have satellite images. They know how much water you've put everywhere. It's an ecosystem around the tractor. And I was talking to actually a Japanese company, 100-year-old company, and I mentioned John Deere, and they kind of growled because their competitors. I said, look, you guys aren't doing any of that stuff. So, you know, we all think about owning the edge. In this case, the edge is the tractor. What else can I sell, right, if I have a connected device? I mean, Shell built themselves into the GM cars. So Shell pops up and says, you're running out of gas. There's a Shell station a mile up there. Mm-hmm. Well, that makes Shell a tech company, sort of, right? I mean, we all have to think about how we're connected to the device that everybody carries 24/7, because that is the edge of sales today.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that is what's so fascinating is just if a tractor company can be a tech company, you know, whatever you do can be a tech company too.
Well, and that's why I talk about digital disruption. You know, tractors aren't the same as they were. And you look at Tesla. I encourage everybody to read the new Elon biography. It's fascinating. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a software platform that happens to be on wheels.
Yeah.
It's really what they have. And many other people are looking at that. I just talked to a company that's collecting dash cam footage from millions of dash cams to do a better job of predicting traffic and mapping. And they're using AI to analyze it. So it's sort of the next generation of ways.
Yeah.
Lots of cool stuff.
Yeah. So I'm always curious to know, you know, kind of the origin story here. Where did you get this bent to be, I guess I would say innovative within a framework, and like intentionally innovative?
Well, I don't know. I credit my mom for making me curious. I was a big reader, and my dad was a maker. We made go-karts, and he was in the radio, and we built radios. And so I was an experimenter, but I was a history major. And, you know, history gives you kind of a long view and helps you put things together. Mm-hmm. And that's really what innovation is about, is, you know, most innovation is not like suddenly we go to Mars. It's building on the past. It's changing one thing. Travelocity was a travel agent. We were just online. Mm-hmm. And once you get into that, you get hooked. And I did my first startup at 21. My last, I think, was 60. And now I'm spending all my time being an advisor to startups, because it's addicting to help people create new stuff. Now you got to realize, you know, 7 out of 10 fail. Mm-hmm. But it also takes, I think, a lot of curiosity and a lot of reading across a broad range of disciplines.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's so you understand the business and the technology that might be applied to the business, because sometimes it's the business asking you to solve a problem. And sometimes you, as like the CIO, are coming saying, hey, here's a tech that we haven't thought of that could create something entirely new.
Absolutely. Very cool. Well, Terry, thank you so much for joining us and sharing us about AI innovation, disruption, and for coming here and being a part of the Beyond Speaking podcast.
Well, thanks. I love working with you and your customers, whether it's AI or disruption or innovation. It's an exciting time to help people with those topics.
Yes, absolutely. And for those who are watching and listening, make sure to go to premierspeakers.com and check out Terry Jones, and also subscribe, rate, and review. So Terry, once again, thanks so much for being a guest here on the Beyond Speaking Podcast.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us for the Beyond Speaking Podcast. To learn more about today's guest, go to premierspeakers.com. Make sure to subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen.